From London, it's the Wired.co.uk podcast, episode 33 for Thursday, the 7th of July, 2011. On the show this week, we'll wriggle our way into the mind of a robotic worm to ask, why do you exist, slithering friend, and how could you assist search and rescue operations? We'll also talk about the iPhone game you've probably heard of being turned into a Hollywood movie, and we'll give you some evidence that, contrary to what you may have heard in the past, suggests we are not living in a hologram world. Shame. But that's all coming up a little later as we discuss this week in Wired News. Greetings, I'm Nate Langson, I'm the editor of Wired.co.uk, and joining me in an ever-expanding tech bubble is senior staff writer Duncan Gear.
Greetings.
Greetings indeed. And also greetings indeed go to associate editor Olivia underscore Solan.
Greetings.
Back from Morocco.
Indeed.
How, every time I feel that we start this podcast, I'm welcoming you back from somewhere.
Yeah, well, I like to travel, mostly for work, but on this case it was a pleasure.
Indeed. Well, I'm going to be travelling for pleasure because I'm going to the Sonosphere Music Festival in a bit, and that's why you get a podcast a day early, because I'm not here to record it.
Aren't we good to you?
You're great to me.
Oh, I didn't mean we. I meant we, the podcasters, to the podcastees.
Doing it a day early so yeah. I can go and watch Metallica.
Yeah, we're good to you.
We're so kind. You should thank us. Anyway, onto the news. The first thing is that Zynga, which you may never have heard of, but you'll probably have heard of Farmville if you've seen any annoying pop-ups on Facebook in the past. Zynga is the company that makes Farmville and I think some other ones. Cityville, is it?
Something. Gargaville.
It's basically SimCity on Facebook. They are showing us that we are, without question, in a tech bubble by filing for an IPO. That's where a company goes public and expects to raise $1 billion.
That's a lot of money.
That's an awful lot of money. I mean, this is a company whose revenue basically comes from the sale of things that don't exist.
Almost entirely, yeah.
It's virtual goods. It's plots of land, it's flowers and sheep and little things to play on Facebook. And they're now going public. And not only they're going public, but some people even believe that they could raise as much as $2 billion, according to some people apparently close to the deal that spoke to the Wall Street Journal, which would value or could value Zynga as much as $20 billion.
But, I mean, the company's doing pretty well. I mean, just to put it into perspective, it's made $600 million in revenues last year and $90 million in profits. So it's not as if this is coming completely out of nowhere.
No, but it's another thing that really does suggest we're in a tech bubble. I mean, look at these figures. And even though they're making, even that they're actually making money here on these revenues, all of this is tied into, you know, 2,000 people work for this company, tied into selling grass and flowers. I mean, doesn't that seem kind of crazy?
And not even real grass and flowers either. It's just bits on a database.
Yeah, but think
somewhere.
How scalable the business is without any of the associated overheads of actually physically manufacturing stuff.
Yeah, but you know what? They're dependent so much on Facebook. I mean, yeah. There was this big uproar a little while ago when Facebook started talking about only accepting Facebook credits for payments to people like Zynga, who, you know, for its users who want to buy virtual goods in these sort of apps. And yeah. Facebook wanted to take 30%. Yeah. And Zynga said, hell no. And went off and made their own site. Because if a company that you're building your company on the back of decides to change its rules down the line,
yeah,
you're screwed.
That is true. And I think the link between Facebook is definitely one to watch. But then even Facebook, if you think about the valuations that are being thrown around with them, it's as much as $70 billion that people are talking about.
We were talking last week that there have been some rumors that it's, you know, worth up to $100 billion based on valuations from, you know, current stocks and things like that.
And what does it actually make? So much less, like a hundredth of that?
Yeah, it doesn't make as much, but it's kind of to do with the potential. But, you know, Zynga's being very, very smart with what they're doing here, and they're not solely relying on Facebook. But a billion-dollar IPO for a company that is based so much on virtual goods is, generally speaking, a very good sign that we are in another bubble. I do not look forward to the giant pin that bursts it. Duncan, tell me about Spotify and Virgin Media.
Virgin has signed a deal with Spotify, which is the popular streaming music service that I'm sure you're all aware of, to offer it to its customers, basically bundled as part of their broadband deals.
Now, the reason I like this story so much, because I don't think you were too fussed about me actually putting this in the lineup, but I really like this because Spotify is a service that basically makes money for offering the same thing that so many people have been used to, you know, getting for free for a long time by having all this access to things like LimeWire, BitTorrent, and whatever. And now what they're doing is they're filtering this service that people are finally paying for into every conceivable platform that can support it.
Yeah, the tech industry and file sharing sites and everything has been delivering music as water for quite some time now. Technology can give us music as water. It's just a case of actually paying for that water. And what Virgin is doing and Spotify are doing are trying to get people to actually pay money in as unobtrusive a way as possible to give something back to the artists that are creating that music.
Liv, are you a Spotify fan? In fact, we've talked about this. You like it, but you won't pay for it.
No, I'm actually now considering paying for it now that they've done this irritating caps on the number of plays. But I think in this case, what's interesting is actually having a really useful TV app for once. There are so many rubbish ones out there. This is actually a really good example of an app that I would definitely use if I had Virgin Media, if I was able to get Virgin Media in my area.
So who is going to be able to get this? Can people just say, I want Spotify in my Virgin box now?
Well, existing Virgin customers will be the first people to gain access to the service. There'll be a kind of pre-registration page that they can go to. It doesn't actually launch until later this year. But existing Spotify users will, I'm sure, be pleased to hear that you can give them your username and it will be transferred over. You won't lose any playlists or anything. You can use your existing Spotify account.
Ah, that's quite cool. And if you get one of these as part of the Virgin deal, can you then use the account you get from Virgin on your computer?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, in all intents and purposes, it's just a regular premium Spotify account or an unlimited Spotify account. There are two options. You can go mobile access or not.
But there is a big caveat that is, it's not just any Virgin PVR. You have to have the TiVo box, don't you?
Yes, you do. And with the bundles, I suspect that Virgin will be providing those boxes. But at the same time, there's also a way for existing customers to upgrade their boxes. If you go to virginmedia.com/TiVo or whatever it is, then you can upgrade.
Excellent. I think that this is a lesson that a lot of streaming companies, independent streaming companies like Spotify, should be taking note of, because if you're bundling it into all of these different things, we've seen it, I think, with Sonos. Didn't they do a tie-up with Sonos, Spotify?
Yep.
It's getting this music onto all of these different hardware platforms and just making water, as you were saying earlier, making music like water. It's making music more of a commodity, which may not please the record industry, but to be perfectly honest, it's where it's going. This is how music is going to be consumed now. It's bundled or it's free and it's used as promotion.
I mean, I think the way they're approaching it is interesting, though. They're doing it granularly. They're going from service to service over time, opening up a new one every so often. We had Sonos and now we've got Virgin. What would be a much more efficient way of doing it is to just open an API and let anyone access into that. Because then you'd be able to have, you know, third parties just building their own services that just hook into an existing API, ask for a username and password, and bang, you're there.
But I suspect the record labels would have something to say about that.
Well, not really. They're getting more money, and they're getting money from people who've paid for it.
But at the moment, they seem to be wanting to control every single one of those relationships.
There's a real difficulty there as well, in that if you just allowed an API open like that, then it means that you could have your mainstream AAA list artist being associated with stuff that you have no control over. So it could mean that you could be embedded into some kind of horrible, dirty website full of unthinkably disgusting things.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm not saying
that's a bad thing.
Well, yeah, and you can play a CD on a really dodgy-looking old CD player that doesn't work properly. It's exactly the same.
Are you suggesting that the music industry, and in fact the creative industry in general, hasn't got double standards? Or has double standards? Hell of a surprise there. Well, anyway, let's move on from Spotify. Although we are going to talk a bit more about broadband, actually, because Ofcom has done something quite cool that Liv wrote some quite cool words about this morning. It's got a big, pretty map of the UK.
It has, yeah. I mean, if you want to find out about how quick the broadband speeds on average are in your area, you now can, thanks to a map that Ofcom has released. And what it's done is it aggregated all of the information from the different communications providers and plotted it on a map in between 200 different administrative authorities, as they describe them.
Are they counties? So,
They're basically counties.
Some are cities, some are counties. But then you can see how quick your broadband is compared with other areas in the UK.
Okay, now is this for people who are wanting to move and they say, well, if I want to move to, I don't know, I want to move to Ealing.
Well,
you all should, because it's
I think it's a very broad brush approach to that. And I'm, again, not sure if it's going to be a real steer on where you move to. But it gives you a really nice picture of the speeds that you can get on average of broadband, the uptake of super fast broadband by percentage and the availability of it, and the percentage of people in those areas or percentage of households in those areas who have a slower than 2 megabits per second speeds of broadband.
So who's got the best stats?
The best stats are Edinburgh and Brighton. Edinburgh and Brighton have...
It's miles away.
I know. You're going to have to move there. They have... Edinburgh has the fastest maximum average speeds with 10.1 megabits per second. And then the city of Brighton and Hove has the highest take-up of fixed broadband services with 80%.
But these are averages in terms of speeds, aren't they?
These are very much averages, yeah. These are averages across quite large areas with obviously big populations.
Well, there's something that came up a few months ago that I think we talked about in a previous episode was that BT tied up with the site Rightmove, the property listings website, so that people, when they were searching for a house, they could have a look at the potential speeds they might get. We criticized it at the time because it was reliant only on BT's data, which obviously is just one company and doesn't represent people like Virgin or any mobile provider. This seems like a better solution to that, doesn't it?
In a way. I mean, it crosses the entire country and it crosses all the providers. But on the other hand, it isn't very granular. You can't delve down to your street or your, you know, little area of the city. It's just the entire county or nothing.
Yeah.
And we've seen in the past, actually, that there are people who, on one side of the street, they say, hey, I can get 50 megabits from Virgin or BT Infinity or whatever. And people, quite literally, a few doors down.
Yeah, meters away.
Oh, I'm stuck on old crappy broadband.
2 megabit or whatever. Yes, yeah. Yeah, I'm
dying down here.
I don't see why it wouldn't be possible to then go that extra step and provide the granularity that BT does with the Rightmove deal.
It would mean collecting an awful lot more data and organising it.
But
and
they
maintaining
have the
data.
The providers have the data. It's just a question of feeding it in.
Well, hopefully that will come soon.
Yeah.
Here's hoping. We're not going to leave the internet story, though, because the EU has announced something quite interesting. And this is going to affect anyone who has ever been over to, say, oh, I don't know, let's think of a European country that isn't ours, Spain.
Italy.
And looked up a few emails, and then they get back and find they've got a bill so high they could buy a really posh cat. I don't know where I'm going with this. Duncan, fill in for me.
The European Commission has basically turned its sights on data roaming charges. Having slashed call and text costs while roaming, their next target is data.
And so at the moment, I think we're paying, or we can be paying, up to as much as about £2 per megabyte.
It's worse than that. The average is about £2 a megabyte. It goes up as far as about, I think, about £10 or so.
Who's that?
I know, that's crazy. But
I think it's £6 a megabyte in the US if you're roaming on a UK phone on my contract, which is just ridiculous. It's less in Europe.
It's crazy. And basically, it only still exists because the phone companies have learnt that business users will pay those ridiculous costs because it's their company paying for them rather than them themselves.
Okay, so the average is around £2 a megabyte or the equivalent in other currencies. What is the new suggestion that I think is being put to people this week going to be?
Well, the European Commission wants operators to be capped at a level of 80p per megabyte from the 1st of July 2012, which will then fall to 45p in July 2014. So it's cutting it substantially.
Yeah, but that's still expensive. If you wanted to download...
80p a megabyte is a lot.
If you were in, and you put some great figures in your story this morning, actually, that if you went over and heard a great song on Spanish radio and you wanted to download it right there and then, you would pay more in data charges than the song itself cost, right?
Yeah, far more. A 5-minute song downloaded from iTunes that weighs around 10 megabytes would cost you £8 to download at an 80p per megabyte charge.
And you could buy the album for that much. Think of that, Liv. An album for the cost of a data charge for one song.
Magical. I mean, it also plays on people's the misconception that there is some increased marginal, huge marginal cost of data abroad, and which is just not the case.
Yeah, it's entirely a construction based on the fact that business users will pay these rates. Yeah.
But also, it's a complete lack of competition, and it's very, very hard to just change this overnight. That's one of the reasons why we're looking at the data 2014 just to get it down to 45p. It's a gradual thing. There have been these termination rate restrictions that have been implemented in the past that basically stops the different networks overbilling each other, but there was still no necessary limit on how much those companies could then charge the end user. This is a much better deal than all that, because it's actually saying this is how much you can charge your customers. So it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, and within the proposals, the EU added a few extra bits. They wanted to let alternative operators like supermarkets also offer roaming services at regulated wholesale prices to try and increase competition. And they also, quite interestingly, wanted to give customers the ability to sign up for separate roaming contracts that you'd use in another country on the same SIM card with the same phone number.
And the same number?
And the same number. So when you're in another country, you're on a completely separate roaming contract, which isn't your regular contract. That only applies in your home country.
So the point is, you wouldn't have to go into another country, buy a new SIM card, which often people do when they're traveling, just so that you benefit from the cheaper data charges.
Yeah, exactly. You just sign up with your existing SIM card details.
Once this data gets down to a suitable level, I mean, this is so important to the industry, really, because with things like Skype, VoIP services, and things like this. This is just, it could completely overhaul how people communicate when they're away, either on personal or business.
And even apps, like map apps, just on a very simple level. Imagine, just being able to go across borders without worrying about the different...
I mean, with speeds of mobile broadband rocketing and use of mobile data rocketing, it just seems ludicrous that by 2014 you've still got prices that are too high for usage that's happening now. I think the EU needs to try an awful lot harder on this.
Well, it's going to be a year until we get the ATP level from July, I think, next year. But still, it's something to look out for and something definitely to keep your eye on. Something else to keep your eye on is a movie screen. Typically, people keep their eyes on movie screens. And Angry Birds, the extremely popular iPhone and Android and everything else app, is getting turned into a movie. We've sort of known this was coming for a while, but now a guy who in fact used to work at Marvel Studios, chairman, his name is David Maisel, has become special advisor to Rovio and has said, quote, "There has been so much chatter about an Angry Birds movie, but it's now real. The process is starting now." Rovio, in fact, bought a Finnish animation studio called Combo last month, or possibly the month before.
This is just going to be the Mario Brothers movie all over again, isn't it?
It's going
to
be.
I have to say, I'm not quite sure how much depth there is in a movie based on flinging birds at other animals, or flinging birds at buildings. In fact, if anything, it's going to be horrible. Because if you imagine, if you threw an actual bird at an actual brick wall, that's not fun, that's cruel.
This is going to be animation, I hope, rather than live action, correct?
Yeah. I don't think there are any such things as stunt birds, so I hope so. But either way, it's the whole thing. And a few issues ago...
You could just kind of cover a water balloon in feathers and hurl that at a wall. That would work, probably. Fill it with maybe like red food colouring water.
Duncan, you're sick. You're a sick man. Please be less sick.
Sorry.
A few issues ago on the cover, we had a cover story on Wired, on the magazine, about Angry Birds. And even in that feature, the CEO of Rovio, Mikael Head, did say that they are moving their business not just towards other apps and other games, but basically about making their entire business about multiple platforms. It's this kind of, what's that great word?
Transmedia.
Transmedia. Thank you, Liv. I was looking at Duncan. Little did I know, Liv had the answer.
Indeed.
Transmedia. You know, just one franchise on all these different platforms, movies, and we've seen this as well, actually, with the Angry Birds Rio game, where there was a tie-in for the Fox movie Rio. Don't know if that was any good.
I just can't get excited about this. I'm sorry. Like, this is... from a business perspective, it makes sense, but is this really that interesting? I mean...
It's a game that's been stupidly popular that's now being turned into a film. That's pretty interesting. It's a game
I don't know. I feel like it's been stupidly popular because an awful lot of people don't know about the range of other games out there.
There is that, but it's a go-to game when you get a new device. It's kind of, it's the game that big companies like to say, we've got Angry Birds. I mean, look at Chrome. When Chrome came out, the Chrome App Store, they're like, we've got Angry Birds. And then Microsoft...
I'd love to see their download figures.
For the Angry Birds. It's millions. Millions. You can see the figures on the page, actually. They do have the number of downloads there. But, you know, Microsoft came out with its Windows 7, games for Windows Phone 7 platform thing a while ago. And they're like, don't worry, we've got Angry Birds. It's a bit sad in a way. But the whole point is that this is a company that used to make lots and lots of little apps for various different companies, made this one killer hit game. And now we're talking about they're making movies from this game and it's on every platform in the world.
Yeah,
it's making
that's
millions.
Awesome. The business story is a good one. But I'm just not sure whether I'm excited about the film.
I'm not bothered about the film.
Good.
I couldn't care less. It's just the fact that they're doing it. That's just fascinating to me. But maybe not live. Fine. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, amongst other things, we're going to talk about robot wormery.
Registration for the Wired 2011 Summit is now open. Don't miss your chance to hear some of the most inspiring talks from thought leaders of the wired world over 2 days this October in London. For more information, please visit wiredevent.co.uk.
I can't believe I said wormery before that break. Never mind. Anyway, Duncan, I feel pretty real. But you've got even more evidence, I think, to suggest that we're not living in a hologram world, which is the maddest thing I've ever read before going away to a festival.
Yeah, well, I didn't even know we ever were meant to be living in a hologram world.
You know what? Neither did I. I feel incredibly real. Touch me. If I, see? Touching.
Yeah, real.
Duncan, WTF.
You both look quite real. These are some results that came out of the GEO 600 gravitational wave experiment last year, which showed a kind of quantum fuzziness, a kind of pixelation at incredibly, incredibly small scales, which suggested, according to some theorists, that what we actually perceive as the universe might be projected from a kind of two-dimensional shell at its edge.
Obviously. Well,
of course. Okay. I have a number of questions. First, how was this detected?
Well, the way it works is you examine the polarization of gamma ray bursts.
Okay.
Okay.
These come from sort of quasars and stars, explosions, supernovae, things like that.
Bazillions of light years away. Yeah. And as they reach Earth, we can look at the polarization of the photons that arrive here, because that's affected by the space-time that they travel through. If there's this kind of fuzziness, this graininess of space, then those grains should twist that polarization, changing the direction in which they oscillate, so that they arrive almost all in the same kind of polarization. And higher energy gamma rays should be twisted much, much more than lower energy ones would be.
So if the fuzziness suggests that we were living in a hologram, what suggests that we now aren't?
Well, there's a European satellite that's been launched that should be able to measure these tiny, tiny scales, and it hasn't found any evidence of quantum fuzziness at all, because they are at the accuracy limits of their data, which are 10,000 times better than any previous readings in the matter. Any quantum grains that do exist now would have to measure 10 to the minus 48 meters or smaller, which is very, very small indeed.
That's insanely tiny. That's insanely tiny.
And what this means is that it's a very, very important result for fundamental physics. It's going to rule out certain string theories, certain quantum loop gravitational theories. It's kind of basically the experimental physicists going back to the theorists and saying, yeah, no, guys, sorry, you're going to have another crack at that one.
But you know what? There are so many of these different theories, and string theory is a tiny quick brief for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, is basically the method to unify relativity, general relativity, which is what Einstein came up with quantum mechanics, which is the very, very tiny stuff, and basically making theories that explain the really, really tiny stuff with the really, really massive stuff like gravity and how planets warp space-time and things.
Yeah, it's an attempt to create a kind of grand unified theory, a set of equations that accounts for everything we see, rather than the two sets that we have at the moment for big stuff and for stuff on tiny scales.
Einstein died unable to solve this, but at least now Duncan has ruled out one possible explanation. Thanks for that, Duncan.
No worries. Okay. Anytime.
So glad. Let's move on to something a little less mind-melting. Liv, physical GIFs. Another great internet term.
Yeah, physical GIFs. I mean, I'm not sure about the title specifically, but this is a group of artists led by Greg Borenstein and Scott Wayne Indiana.
That's a good name.
It's a good name. Who are kind of...
you could start a fire with that name.
You might be able to start a fire with that name.
Woof.
Or put a fire out with that name. But they've kind of come up with this physical spinning zoetrope type of device. But instead of normally zoetropes, for those who don't know, hopefully people do, use a series of animations and frames and little slits, and you peer at the pictures through as they spin round through those slits, and you see a kind of a moving image. Whereas the things that they're making involve a series of laser cut frames which go around a carousel and a strobe light that flashes on and off at perfect intervals, so you see a frame, just one frame every however many seconds.
Rotation, yeah.
In rotation, so you see an animation. And they're looking for £4,000, no, $4,000 in on a Kickstarter funding page.
I would love to see this on Dragon's Den. Could you imagine that explanation?
Yeah.
To Peter Jones. His question would be what my question is to you, Duncan.
What?
Why?
Well, I'm confused about what the business is. I mean,
it's not a business. It's a fun art project, isn't it? But I just like the idea that you could put...
It's the fun of turning something virtual that exists on the internet. And animated GIFs have become an enormous subculture in their own right. Mm. And it's turning that... It's putting that on your coffee table. It's turning it into reality.
New. I've seen this very guy actually did something in 2007 at the Connecticut Art Fair, which was a huge, large-scale one of these with a kind of weird melting head and hands and soap arrangement. So, but you can actually put any GIF that you want on it, can't you, Duncan?
Yes, kind of. The creators of the project have got three kind of test GIFs that they've been doing it with, and if you contribute a small amount of money to the project, then you can get one of those. They've also grabbed a bunch of digital artists, Ryder Rips, Null Sleep, Sarah Ludi, and Sterling Crispin, to create limited edition GIFs that will only be available in a physical form. And if you donate $250 to the project, then you'll get one of 10 of each of those. But if you contribute $350 or more, the top level, you can actually design your own GIF, which they'll laser cut and manufacture and send to you. So you can, I guess, use it for any GIF on the web.
If anyone wants to do this, where would they go?
You have to go to their Kickstarter page. You can find a link on our site. If you search for physical GIFs on wired.co.uk, we've got a link through to the Kickstarter page.
Fab. We've got one more story to get to before we wrap up this slightly early show, which is something you actually wrote, Duncan, this morning, about a robot worm that sort of slinks its way through a series of things.
Yeah, that's right. We've had worm bots and snake bots in the past. I think, Liv, you wrote about a snake bot fairly recently. We mentioned it on the podcast, didn't we?
Yeah, it's one that wheedled your way into the body to either deliver drugs or cameras to see awkward parts of your innards.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah. This one's it's rather bigger than that one. You wouldn't want this going through your body. It's kind of about the size of, I don't know,
a meter.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe about a meter
a
long.
Snake.
Yeah, it's pretty big, but it differs very much from other kind of snake and worm bots. Regular snake and worm bots that we've seen in the past are generally propelled by a kind of wave of motion, but then when they hit an obstacle, they change their shape to deal with that obstacle. Whereas this one, which is based on the C. elegans nematode worm, doesn't stop and change its behavior when it hits an obstacle. It just keeps on wiggling, and it hopes that its continued wiggling will help it get round the obstacle. And in the vast, vast majority of cases, it actually does. It just goes and goes and goes, and eventually it gets to its destination.
I'm yet to find a problem in my life that cannot be solved with extreme amounts of wiggling, to be perfectly honest. But what's this going to be used for? Like, why is this? This is from the University of Leeds, I think, that has developed this prototype. What's it actually used for? Why has it been created?
Well, the designer of the worm, a guy called Jordan Boyle, wants it to deal with very high pressure search and rescue kind of operations. In those environments, you don't want something that's very, very complicated, that has lots and lots of multiple points of failure where it can break down. You want something that's very simple. You stick it in, it keeps on wiggling, it gets to the place where it wants to go.
And the idea is to look for people, or is it...
Yeah, it could carry heat-seeking equipment or cameras through sort of gaps and holes in buildings that have been damaged, say, in an earthquake or something like that.
Okay.
I have to say, this is all amazing stuff, and there's a video we've got on the website that everyone should check out. It's fantastic. But if I was trapped somewhere and I heard a little robot noise...
and
the first thing I saw was this little worm head sort of wriggling out of the snow, I'm not sure I'd feel safe as much as I'd feel utterly terrified.
It would be a little bit on the creepy side, definitely.
And the fact that it would bump into you and continue to wiggle until it got through you.
It would just wiggle past you.
Okay.
You'd just suddenly feel something brushing against your leg. You wouldn't be able to see it because you had half a building on you.
Yeah.
Would be very, very unsettling.
Very worrying.
Well, we're going to wiggle our way out of recording a podcast now. That's our show for this week. We don't have a feature because we're incredibly short of time. We've got some amazing stuff lined up for next week. So do make sure you check that. For the time being, Duncan, tell people how they can get in touch with us.
You can get in touch with us on Twitter. We are at Wired UK. I am at Duncan Gear. Nate is at Nate Langson. Liv is at Olivia_Solon. And Katie, who hasn't had the pleasure of appearing in this week's podcast,
she's off today, that's why.
Lovely nonetheless, is at KatieScott1980.
And on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/WiredUK, we have a ton of stuff on there, but we're still running our Inevitable Robot Uprising contest for anyone who wants to go and win a rather popular tablet computer.
The support for the robots is outweighing the opposition, isn't it?
It's amazing. Could you imagine that readers of Wired support the inevitable uprising of robots and machines? Who'd have thunk it? I'd have thunk it.
And finally, if you have any thoughts, you want to just get something off your chest, you want to confide in us, tell us something secret, you can email us podcast@wired.co.uk. We won't tell anyone, promise.
And for the time being, I'm going to a festival. I will see you next week, as will Duncan and Liv.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Or can I just get you to say, do you want to touch me? Do I feel real? Yes. Does that mean I'm not a hologram? And you can say, well, maybe.
Do you just want me to touch you?